News Time 810. The morning show with Greg Berg is next.
WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for the morning show also comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea is a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music on your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg.
Once upon a time, in a far-off kingdom,
I wish,
lived a fair maiden.
More than anything, more than life,
a sad young lad,
more than Jew, I wish,
a childless baker.
More than life,
I wish,
and his
more
wife,
than anything, more than the moon,
I wish. The king is giving a festival.
More than life,
I wish to go to the festival.
More than riches,
and more.
I wish my cow would give some milk.
More than anything,
I wish we had a child.
I want a child.
You wish to go to the festival?
The poor girl's mother had died.
This is the opening of one of the great masterworks in Broadway musicals, Into the Woods by Stephen Sondheim. My wife and I saw Into the Woods on Broadway, and it's one of the high points of all the many things that we have seen on all kinds of great stages. It is an incredibly important, innovative, wonderful score. And it is being undertaken by the Lakeside Players of Kenosha. No small feat. And I'm very excited for this portion of the morning show to be talking today with Joe Cardamone, who is the stage director and musical direction, wearing both hats simultaneously for the Lakeside Players production of Into the Woods. And we also have one of the cast members with us, Brittany Daniels, whom I know from her student days at Carthage. And Brittany is in the cast as Little Red Riding Hood, one of the most important roles in the show. And we might or might not see Jack, who is also in real life, Jack Lambert. The two of them are part of a very, very fine cast. And this production opens this weekend at the Rodie Opera House in downtown Kenosha. Joe Cardamone, Brittany Daniels, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you. Good
Thank
to be back.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Joe, remind me about, and our listeners, about the process by which shows get chosen for the Lakeside Players. I mean, was this just your crazy idea or someone else's crazy idea or the crazy idea of a lot of people that the Lakeside Players should undertake Into the Woods?
There is a play reading committee that goes through and makes suggestions to our board of directors, which then actually selects the slate. A couple of years ago, when we had done The Wizard of Oz, we'd had a great deal of success. That obviously had then sort of bought me, if you will, some credit to have at least some say in what we were going to do next. And in fact, at one point, I basically heard that someone on the board had said, "We'll do whatever Joe wants to do," and I said, "I don't know."
Really?
I'm not going down with the ship like that. You know, I will give you a slate of things to pick from that I would be interested in directing, and that's how we wound up with Avenue Q last year, which blew my mind. I did the same thing this year. I did make maybe a slightly more concerted pitch for this or for company, because Sondheim will be turning 85 in March. Hmm. I thought, you know, he is almost certainly the greatest living musical theater composer we've got. I thought it would be nice to try and honor him in whatever small way we could. I really was sort of thinking more company, because I thought nothing Sondheim does is easy, but it would be an easier show to mount in terms of costumes and sets and so on and so forth. And they went with this one. And I think in some ways we've been building to this, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years. I think every year we try to push ourselves a little bit further and try to demonstrate, you know, some new height, I guess, that we can reach. You know, we've in the last, again, 5 or 6 years, just sort of keep on pushing our boundaries. There are still days, and I've told the cast this, that I sort of sit there wanting to pitch myself, going, I still can't quite believe that we're doing this, you know, and why didn't somebody stop me earlier on, you know, but I couldn't be more pleased with how it's going.
Was it always a foregone conclusion that you would be both the stage and music director? I mean, was that kind of the most likely scenario right from the start?
Yeah, they like it there because obviously they only have to find one person then to sort of run stuff. I've discovered that I'm a little bit of a control freak. And one of the advantages of being the music director is then my job doesn't end on opening night. You know, if you're the stage director, you're finished. I mean, there's really nothing more you can do. You can stand around backstage being supportive. You can sit in the back of the house twiddling your thumbs and worrying that, you know, everything's going to happen the way it's supposed to happen. But there's really... Unless you're one of those directors, and I've had these directors who continue to give notes once the run starts, but for the most part, your job is finished.
Right. One hopes.
Yeah, exactly. As a music director, I feel like I still am able then to engage in the production because I'm there every night, you know, working the orchestra, whatever it winds up being, whether it's a 12-piece pit like this one or a 3-piece combo like we had last year where I was playing piano. I've told people that for years my goal has been to actually have two assistant directors, you know, since I'm wearing both hats. I would really love to have an assistant stage director and an assistant music director. So whatever I'm working on, somebody else can be doing something else. One of the challenges of being the music director, as you probably know, is that you also tend often by default to become the rehearsal pianist, which is fine, but it means it's sometimes harder for me to see what's going on stage if I'm trying desperately to, say, for example, play a Sondheim score.
Right. No small feet.
Which is not something you can do a lot of looking up and down from. But to go back, I guess, to your original question, yes. I think the it was always sort of presumed that I would probably do both. And again, I think the organization likes the fact that they don't have to find two separate people. Going forward in the future, I think for the good of the organization, it's probably best to keep trying to build a stable of people who can do each of those roles. And I find when I've worked with directors in the past that unless you're coming from a musical theater background, I think directors are intimidated by the thought of doing a musical. And yes, there are different aspects, and yes, there are different moving parts, and yes, you have... But at the end of the day, I think if you can direct a stage show, as long as you have good people with you, you can direct a musical, you know, just as well.
On the other hand, Into the Woods, by its very nature, seems like the kind of work where it maybe makes sense if you have someone crazy enough to do it. It makes sense for one person to do all that because the music and the speaking and the action are all so intimately intertwined.
Yeah.
And it's in many cases, it's hard to even say, well, this the talking stopping, the singing is starting, and now this is suddenly more your responsibility than mine. I mean, it's melded. It's all just one.
Yeah,
so.
It's similar, and as you say, probably even more so than the conversation that I have with the choreographer early on, and we sort of try and work out, okay, what's truly a dance number and what's just sort of blocked movement. What's your responsibility, what's mine, and there are portions where, all right, up till this point in the music, it's just being blocked, but, you know, now you're sort of taking over and it's becoming dance.
When did you first encounter Into the Woods? I mean, I'm assuming you've seen it.
Yeah, the late 80s, and I don't remember exactly which year it was, but I was on a student trip, sort of a student government type thing. We stopped for the last couple of days of the trip in Washington, D.C., and so I actually got to see a performance at the Kennedy Center, I think, and this may now be the vagaries of memory and, you know, like everyone was at Woodstock. I think that I saw, if not the original Broadway cast, then something very similar to it in D.C. at the Kennedy Center, including, I'm fairly certain that I saw Bernadette Peters. But again, I may just choose to remember that. And I just loved it. I'd had the CD but not listened to it prior to seeing the show, and then absolutely loved it and was very fortunate my freshman year in college that was the production they were doing that year. And I tell people, as I think every performer has their sort of list of dream roles that they would love to do and don't know if they're ever actually going to have the opportunity to. And I was incredibly fortunate to be able to cross the Baker off my list fairly early on in my theatrical career as a 18 or 19 year old. So it's always held a very special place in my heart, and it was one of the reasons I also wanted to do it, because so much of the show is about the relationship between parents and children that I think I have a vastly different perspective on it as a 42-year-old father than I did as a 19-year-old college student. It's been very interesting for me to come back and look at it, you know, from a very, very different perspective.
We're speaking with Joe Cardamone, who is music director and stage director of the Lakeside Players production of Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods, a production which is opening this Friday night. And also with us in the studios is Brittany Daniels, a recent graduate of Carthage College, who is part of a very talented cast, and she is portraying the role of Little Red Riding Hood. Brittany Daniels, apart from the fact that you studied musical theater at Carthage, you've probably known a lot about and admired Stephen Sondheim, I'm thinking, for a long time. Have you had much in the way of actual encounters with his music on stage, or is this kind of a first for you to be singing Sondheim on a stage?
This is my second show that is Stephen Sondheim. He is my favorite composer, so I've been waiting forever. I got to play Phelia, and funny thing happened on the way to the Forum. And I know that he didn't actually write the music for, but he wrote the lyrics for West Side Story, so I did get to do that one, too. One day I want to be in Sweeney Todd.
Do you have it all figured out? What is it about Stephen Sondheim that you enjoy so much?
He just has a way of finding a way to take dark music and make it very beautiful. And my voice is a little bit darker, so it just, it fits.
So when you were thinking about Little, when you saw Into the Woods as this new possibility at the Lakeside Players, I'm guessing that there were probably several different roles that would have intrigued you and have been within your grasp. Had you ever imagined yourself singing the role and performing the role of Little Red Riding Hood?
I didn't think about me playing Little Red Riding Hood until I got to the audition, and one of the ladies there, she said, "You're auditioning for Little Red Riding Hood, right?" And I was like, "I guess so." I was thinking more I wanted to play the witch.
Well, it turns out that you're really wonderful in the role of Little Red Riding Hood, and it's probably a role that lets you really in particular exercise your comic gifts. Have you had fun with it?
Yes, I've had a lot of fun with this. I like playing children roles because I feel more comfortable with comedy when I'm playing a child.
Ah, very good. Joel, tell us a little bit about the casting process for Into the Woods. How large a cast are we talking about, and what kind of nervousness did you experience as director going into the casting process?
Well, it's a cast of wound up being 18. Double up a couple of parts, which are typically doubled up. So I think we're doing it the way it is frequently done. I was very nervous. It was a large cast. I think anytime you're working with a larger cast rather than a smaller cast, you're always worried, are there going to be enough people? Are there going to be sufficient talent? We are not that far removed from days when I can remember us really struggling to have to get people out to audition or trying to after the fact, not being able to cast a show with the people who had shown up and having to go back and either do another round or ask people to come in. One of the benefits, I think, of the push we've made in the last couple of years is you develop that credibility and then you get a better turnout, and then especially a show like this, which I think is very well thought of in musical theater circles. I know that as far back as last May, when you folks were working on Les Mis at the Guild, there were already murmurings going on because I had a couple of good friends in that cast. Telling people, oh, it looks like it's going to be Into the Woods, and it looks like it's going to be, Joe Cardamone, and da-da. And so I knew that there was interest, which was good. I never believe people are going to show up until they do, but they did, and we had probably, I want to say, close to 50 people audition again for what wound up being a 18-person cast, which was a good number that I was comfortable with. We were able to call back, I think we called back something in the neighborhood of about 28 or so. So I think we had about a third more people there than we knew we were going to cast, or 30. But it's always nerve-wracking. It's always nerve-wracking trying to put those pieces together. It's always trying to figure out what's going to be the right combination. I'm not going to say that I enjoy it, because it's always one of the most excruciating parts, particularly when you have to sometimes make a leap of faith and say, I think this is right, or when you're disappointing people that you know and like and have worked with before. That's never fun. I don't enjoy doing that, obviously. But I think, I tell myself that I think one of the strengths that I have as a director is I do think I cast pretty well. I think I usually find the right people and put them in the right parts. It's funny. This is probably I think it's the third show in a row where I know that not everybody who came out necessarily got the part they wanted or thought they wanted, but I think everyone has seen why they got the parts they got, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. I think everyone recognizes that I put people where I thought they needed to be. And one actor, and I'm not going to give specifics, but it's the second production in a row that I've done with him where I know he didn't get the part that he thought he wanted, but I think he's been very happy with how things have turned out and with the part he did wind up receiving. So,
we're speaking with Joe Cardamone and Brittany Daniels about the production of Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods, which opens this weekend at the Racine Theater Guild.
At the Lakeside Players
with the Roadie Opera. Well, it's your fault for bringing up Les Mis.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Just don't want you sending people to Racine.
Right. Not if they're looking for Into the Woods.
Exactly. Yes.
Joe, I remember when I saw Into the Woods on Broadway, I remember walking out thinking this Stephen Sondheim person, who I already, of course, knew a lot about, is from another planet. I mean, it was an extraordinary experience to see this work and to try to imagine the fertile creative imagination from which it sprang. And of course, a lot of people right now know Into the Woods more know it than they otherwise might because of the film, of course, that has just been out and receiving such great acclaim. But for somebody listening who really doesn't know what this is about, explain the central premise of Into the Woods.
Sure. It is a mashup, if you will, of popular fairy tales. It begins with a baker and his wife who've been trying for some time, it says, to start a family, have been very disappointed that it hasn't happened. And they discovered the reason that it hasn't happened, it hasn't worked, is that they actually have had a curse placed upon them by the witch who happens to live next door. And there's reasons for that in the backstory. And in order to lift the curse, she explains that she's going to need the ingredients to make a potion. And the ingredients are Cinderella's slipper, Jack and the Beanstalk's cow, Little Red Riding Hood's cape, and hair, which winds up coming from Rapunzel. So it's the catalyst to bring these four very popular fairy tales or fairy tale characters together. As I said before, a lot of it deals in some ways more subtle than others with relationships between parents and children. There's some very complicated parental relationships in the show. And the first act is really the stories that people know. A little less Disney-fied, but the story is for the most part that people know. What gets interesting then is the second act, where what happens after Happily Ever After? What is the price that you pay for getting the wish you want? And what are the consequences for the decisions you made in pursuing your goal? Because nearly everybody makes it at some point a compromise or a bad decision or something in pursuit of what they want, and then have to deal in the second act with really what are some of those consequences. So the second act certainly gets darker, but I mean also contains, I think, you know, a couple of the most beautiful songs Sondheim has ever written, in my opinion, you know, come up in the second act of the show.
One of the things that strikes me about the show is not only the way these different fairy tales are combined together. I mean, these various characters all sort of traveling through the same woods from various directions, the different worlds they come from. But also, as you kind of touched on, the way in which these fairy tales are treated in a way that's also a little less sweet and saccharine than we sometimes think of them. Although in some cases, the original versions of some of these fairy tales are pretty dark and laced with violence,
yeah.
But often the way they end up showing up in a children's book on your child's shelf is a very sort of safe, sugar-coated version.
And it's interesting because I think in some ways that may have been what they were trying to get back to. I mean, I think a lot of these stories originally were meant to be somewhat cautionary tales. I mean, for example, you take the easiest one probably to take is the story of Little Red Riding Hood. And I know because we got a version of that from the library recently and we're reading it to our own kid. And I think both my wife and I at one point sort of said, well, hey, we should have read the whole thing before we started reading it out loud. you know, but, you know, the, she she, you know, her mother makes her promise, you know, you're not going to stray from the path. You're going to stay, you know, directly on it, you know, until you get to Granny's house. And she is tempted away from the path by the wolf, which allows, you know, the wolf the opportunity to get to Granny's house first and surprise both of them. And I mean, the version that we got from the library actually ended with something about how, you know, and you know, for the rest of her days, she remembered always to keep her word or something like that, you know, and I think they were. I think a lot of the grim fairy tales in the original ones were meant to be somewhat cautionary tales to children. And we've gotten somewhat away from that in sort of the Disney pop culture. You know, they've sort of glossed over some of the as you say, some of the darker aspects to the stories in favor of the more fanciful and the happy endings and so forth. I mean, you know, I could go through any number of the changes that Disney has made to some of the popular stories. But you're right. I think it's one of the things that's very striking is that note that the show hits.
Hmm. Let's talk a second more about Little Red Riding Hood specifically. And Brittany, one of the things that I've been struck by listening to rehearsals is how on the one hand, you always know it's Sondheim. I mean, Sondheim's pretty unmistakable in the way that he writes, and yet he tends to write also with each character in mind. So, for instance, a lot of the music that you sing as Little Red Riding Hood, we don't necessarily imagine that coming out of any other character. How does it feel to sing the music of Little Red Riding Hood?
I feel like the music, it helps you be able to portray a child more so. I think that he captures her innocence, but he also captures the fact that she's a rebel throughout the entire show. And I think that kids will be able to relate to her a lot because she's very sassy, but she has to learn a few lessons along the way. I think that, especially I Know Things Now, shows that she's very naive and she realizes that she's naive and she thinks, well, maybe next time I'll actually listen to my mother. And I think that this is part of the reason why this role, why I have so much fun with it, because I've been there before. Sometimes with roles, you have to do a whole lot of research to even understand the character. But I think all of us have not listened to our parents and had to deal with consequences because of that.
Sure. Here's a little taste of the role of Little Red Riding Hood from Into the Woods.
Mother said straight ahead, not to delay or be misled. I should have heeded her advice, but he seemed so nice. And he showed me things, many beautiful things that I hadn't thought to explore. They were off my path, so I never had dared. I had been so careful, I never had cared. And he made me feel excited, well, excited and scared.
Wonderful little taste of the role of Little Red Riding Hood and, of course, Stephen Sondheim's remarkable music. Joe Cardamone, with both the role of Little Red Riding Hood and Jack, people who've gone to the film version are seeing a very young person on the screen as Little Red Riding Hood and a young boy with an unchanged voice as Jack. Did you think at all about doing that in casting this show?
I mean, it was always a possibility. We actually had a couple of younger people audition for the show, and it was something we thought about. I think there are advantages and disadvantages to both approaches. I personally thought that knowing what the production was likely to be like, knowing what the schedule was likely to be like, knowing that the thing is just a long show. You know, it probably clocks in. I think we worked out at just over 2.5 hours without an intermission. I thought on balance it was probably better to try and have a little bit older people who could play younger from sort of practical aspects. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen Brittany in a number of things, particularly at Carthage, knew that she could certainly play younger and played effectively, and had the opportunity to work with Jack Lambert last year, and likewise had a pretty good sense that he would be able to very believably bring across sort of the youthful exuberance of that character.
Very good. explain to our listeners just how difficult this is musically.
It's quite difficult musically. It's there are a number of strange harmonies, although most of those come more in the orchestral parts than in the singing parts. But it's just, first of all, Sondheim is, in addition to being a fantastic music composer, is an amazing lyricist. About 3 or 4 years ago, I discovered that he is a crossword puzzle fanatic and immediately thought, well, of course. I mean, just listening to his lyrics, of course he is. The rhymes he does and the rhythmic schemes. There are times when a piece will change, you know, time signatures or meters, you know, three times in the course of six measures, often for no good reason. You know, there are, I know a couple of the cast members are you know, banging their heads gently against the wall because, you know, they may have to count, you know, five beats before their next entrance, and then even though the next one is going to sound almost identically the same, it's only going to be two, you know, and there's not a specific rhyme or reason to why it was done other than variety or how he heard it in his head when he was conducting it. Fortunately, we have a very strong cast musically. I spent an additional week. I usually start musicals with 2 weeks of just music rehearsals, and I did an additional week this time. I did three, and was very pleased. You know, there are still little glitches, but was very pleased with how it came out. And I was telling somebody recently, I almost wish that there was more large ensemble stuff. It's a lot of solos and duets. There are a couple of big group numbers. There is a moment at the end of the show, during the finale, where it builds from a solo to a quartet, and slowly the entirety of the cast comes in, and it is such a glorious sound. It gives me goosebumps every night when we do it. That I wish there were more moments like that in the show, just because it's such a beautiful sound from these people. But it was challenging, and again, a lot of the challenge had to do with the rhythm and trying to get things exactly right. You know, where's this entrance? Well, it's halfway through beats one and two. You know what I mean?
Well, I see Brittany smiling and nodding her head. So as one of the cast members, she's you're well acquainted with how difficult this score is.
Yes, this is probably the most difficult score that I have ever worked on. You have to have an extensive range for every single character in this show. Mm-hmm. I know that there are a lot of people who are like, I normally sing alto, but he wants me to sing soprano in this. And I in certain songs, he writes for Little Red to sing down with the alto, even the tenor part. Mm. And I'm definitely a soprano, so I try to take the soprano part when I can, but usually he doesn't let me.
But yeah, I mean, as a matter of fact, probably a lot of those standard designations of soprano and alto and tenor, they don't exist
for him.
For Stephen Sondheim, it's like he doesn't much think about those categories.
No, I mean, and Brittany's right. I mean, if you look at like the front page of the score where it has all of the cast laid out and what the ranges for them are supposed to be. Yeah, I mean, they're all over the map. And when I was putting together audition materials, I tried to give sort of like a best guess. Well, this character is more of a soprano. This character is more of a mezzo, but they're really.
I thought one of the really interesting moments to showcase the difficulty of this score is an ensemble that comes from the second act, in which you have several different characters bickering, trying to trade off the blame. Can you want to say a little more about this moment before we play it?
Sure. Without wanting to reveal a fairly major plot moment, a catastrophe, several catastrophes, both large and small, have hit by this point. And there are four characters who are very much trying to work out who ultimately bears responsibility for the situation. There's a giant who is sort of rampaging through the kingdom, in part as a consequence of Jack's adventures up the beanstalk in the first act. And so there's a great deal of trading blame back and forth. You know, who ultimately maybe bears responsibility for what's going on.
Mm. And Brittany, I'm sure, is one of the singers who participates in this. It has to be an incredible challenge to remain in character and to be sort of alive in the moment, and yet at the same time counting your little head off to just come in correctly. Trying to not let the audience see just how wickedly difficult this piece is.
Yeah, we rely on each other a whole lot in this song. If one of us messes up and misses our cue, then there's a large chance that the song is going to just fall apart. And we definitely went through that a few times, but I feel like the faster we do it, it's easier. It's literally a conversation. So if it's almost like you're jumping on each other's lines like you would in an argument. So as long as we remember that, then it's awesome.
It really is. Here's this moment from Act Two of Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods.
It's because of you there's a giant in our midst and my wife is dead.
But it isn't my fault. I was given those beans. You persuaded me to trade away my cow for beans. And without those beans, there had been no stock to get up to the giants in the first place.
Wait a minute. Magic beans for a cow so old that you had to tell a lie to sell it, which you told. Were they worthless beans? Were they oversold? Oh, and Tala, who persuaded you to steal that gold?
See, it's your fault.
No.
So it's your fault.
No.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
It's true.
Wait a minute. Though I only stole the gold to get my cow back from you.
So it's your fault.
Yes.
No, it isn't. I'd have kept those beans, but our house was cursed. She made us get the cow to get the curse reversed.
It's your father's fault that the curse got place and the place got cursed in the first place.
Oh, then it's his fault.
So?
It was his fault.
No.
Yes, it is. It's his.
I guess.
Wait a minute. Though I chopped down the beanstalk, right, that's clear. But without any beanstalk, then what's queer is how did the second giant get down here in the first place? Second place?
Yes.
How?
Well, you had the other bean.
The other bean?
The other bean?
You pocketed the other bean.
I didn't. Yes, I did.
So it's your fault.
No, it isn't, because I gave it to my wife.
So it's her.
No, it isn't.
Then whose is it?
Wait a minute. She exchanged that bean to obtain your shoe, so the one who knows what happened to the bean is you.
You mean that old bean that your wife, oh dear, but I never knew, and so I threw it. Don't look here.
So it's your fault.
But,
see, it's her fault.
But,
and it isn't mine at all.
But what?
But if you hadn't gone back up again.
We were needy.
You were greedy. Did you need that hen?
But I got it from my mother.
So it's her fault then.
Yes, and what about the harp in the third place?
The harp, yes.
She wouldn't dare me to.
I dare you to.
You dare me to. She said that I was scared
me?
To. She dared
no,
me.
No, I didn't.
So it's your fault.
Wait a minute.
If you hadn't dared him to.
And you would have left the harp alone.
Well,
we wouldn't be in trouble in the first place.
In the first place.
Well, if she had raised
him in the first place.
She had raised him in the first place.
It's her fault.
She's responsible. She's the one who made it. It's her fault.
Good stuff from Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods. For those of you just joining us, I have with me in the studio Joe Cardamone, who is the stage and music director for the Lakeside Players production of Into the Woods, and also in the studio with us today, Brittany Daniels, who portrays the role of Little Red Riding Hood. The production opens Friday night, and it runs for the next several weekends. Joe Cardamone, as we've touched on, there is a major motion picture version of Into the Woods, which is out in theaters right now, and undoubtedly a lot of our listeners have actually seen that film. First of all, at the time that you that this got scheduled, did you have any notion that was going to be the case? And do you see that as a advantage, disadvantage? Is it just something you have to live with?
We did, and in fact, it was one of the things that I thought might be a mark against it. I wasn't sure if not only doing it, but doing it really so close in proximity. You know, the movie just opened on Christmas Day, and we're going to be opening almost exactly 1 month later. Whether that was more of a benefit in terms of sort of publicity and general knowledge about the show, or more of a drawback, you know, which, well, I can go see this on the big screen with people I know, and special effects and better production values and so on and so forth. I sort of, you know, left that with people above my pay grade who make the decisions about what we're actually going to do to determine. And they obviously made the determination that they thought on balance it either was neutral or a benefit, you know, to have so much publicity out there about the movie. So I really went back and forth about whether to see it or not. Number one, I'd heard about some of the changes that they were making from the stage show for the movie. But more importantly, I'm always very concerned about even subconsciously stealing from somebody else's version, Unless I'm making a very conscious choice that yes, I really like that, and I'm going to take that, but I didn't necessarily want to be affected by anything that they had done in the movie, and I had to weigh that against a desire that I really felt this was probably something worth seeing on the big screen, and if I were to wait until we got done with the show, was that still going to be an option or not? So I did in fact go see it. I was very impressed. I understood. Pretty much all of the changes they made from a narrative standpoint and from sort of a format standpoint, as somebody said, a traditional quote-unquote three-act movie rather than a two-act play, where you have an intermission and you can sort of, the beats are just different. The narrative beats are different. Much of what they did I liked very much.
How about you, Brittany? I know that you went, you made specific mention of a couple things you especially liked. So, in general, what did you think of the film?
A lot of times I'm a bit skeptical when they turn musicals into movies. I thought they did a fantastic job with this one. I thought that particularly Meryl Streep was amazing in how she portrayed the witch. I was very impressed with her singing. I was very impressed with her acting, per usual. And just the way that they were able to portray the show on the screen without losing any of the elements that are in the musical version of it. A lot of times, a lot of things have to be cut just because of a time frame thing, but they pretty much kept everything. They may have cut a couple of songs, but for the most part, everything's in there.
Right. You don't feel like you're missing very much. And by and large, it's quite a successful treatment. I suppose also maybe with Mr. Sondheim's 85th birthday in mind, although I don't know that for certain.
I know they've been kicking around the idea of a movie for probably at a minimum 20 years. I know at one point they had contracted with the Jim Henson Company to do sort of practical effects for it. There was a reading in the 90s of a script. And I'm trying to remember who all was involved, but I know that Robin Williams and Goldie Hawn, read the parts of the baker and his wife. And I can't remember who they had for the witch at that point. But I mean, it's gone through many iterations. It's gone through a lot of stops and starts. I'm pleased that they got the director they got. I think if there's somebody who understands how to take a musical and put it on stage, it's Rob Marshall. And I think one of the challenges usually with adapting musicals to stage is there is inherently an unrealistic aspect to musicals. You have people walking around on stage bursting into song. It doesn't happen in real life that often. And so there's inherently an unrealistic aspect to it. And then you make a film, and I think that, again, in part because of the medium, there's usually a desire to try and make it more realistic, and there's a desire to open it up and say, we now have this huge canvas to paint on, we can do stuff we could never do in a stage, and I find that frequently, for me, costs the show its intimacy when that happens, and fortunately, this is a show which I think lends itself both to that, to opening it up onto a grander canvas, if you will. And it's inherently unrealistic. And so whether you're doing it on stage or on film, it's going to be unrealistic no matter what. And I think that's maybe one of the successful aspects of translating this particular show.
Hmm. Let's share with our listeners one of the loveliest moments from the show, just because, as it turns out, just about everything we've played from the score has been, kind of the angular kind of music that Sondheim is well known for. But he knows how to write gorgeous music, too. Real quick, Joe, tell our listeners who sings No One Is Alone and why.
No One Is Alone is sung primarily by Cinderella and the Baker, and then are joined a little bit by Red and Jack. And it's a moment where Red essentially confides in Cinderella, who she barely knows, about sort of the personal tragedies that have befallen her, along with so many other people at this point in the show. And although she never actually, I think, says the words, you know, clearly is indicating, you know, I'm alone. I don't have anybody left. And Cinderella's response is, well, no one is alone. You may think you are, and it may feel that way, but no one is ultimately alone.
Here's this moment from Act Two of Into the Woods of Stephen Sondheim.
Mother cannot guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the war. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone.
I wish.
I know. Mother isn't here now.
Wrong things, right things.
Who knows what she'd say?
Can say what's true.
Nothing's quite so clear now.
Do things, fight things.
Dear, you've lost your way.
You decide, but you are not alone.
Believe me, no one is alone.
No one is alone, believe me.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous music of Stephen Sondheim, and beautiful lyrics, of course, as well. So, Joe, the production is about to open. It opens Friday night.
Friday night, yeah.
And in the closing stretch here, I know that you are busy making sure that some of the last little bits of magic occur and this and that. So how are things feeling as Friday night looms?
They're feeling good. They are, there are, as you say, still a few little bits, but they're feeling good. It's a wonderful cast. Very talented, working very well together, as far as I can tell. I'm aware of you know, very little sort of drama going on off stage, which is fine with me. A great pit, of which we haven't mentioned, you are an integral part, for which I am incredibly grateful and consider myself fortunate. 12 fabulous musicians who are all giving their time to bring this music to life on stage. We're getting down to printing programs and making sure that tech stuff is going to work on Friday night. And it's going to be something very special, I think.
What do people do if they are interested in seeing Into the Woods?
Best thing to do would be to go to our website, Rhode Center, that's Rhode Center, .org. They can purchase tickets there. The performances are at the Rhode Center for the Arts, located at 514 56th Street in downtown Kenosha. They do begin this Friday night and run then weekends through Saturday, February 7th. Friday and Saturday night performances are at 7:30, and Sunday matinees are at 2.
Joe Cardamone, stage and music director for Into the Woods, and Brittany Daniels, the Little Red Riding Hood for this production of Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods. My thanks to both of you joining me today on The Morning Show. It's been great to talk with you about this masterpiece from the world of musical theater.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.
Into the woods, into the woods, and out of the woods.
WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what